This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and wave our arms around a lot while we're doing the intro.
And this week we're talking about American cheese.
Okay, American cheese. I know I say this every week or almost every week, but I truly was surprised to discover we hadn't done this yet. Sometimes I just say that and I don't mean it. But this time I mean it.
Wait a minute, what other things are you saying that you don't mean?
I love you.
No, no.
To you, Matthew. No. Only to you. Just kidding. Just kidding. I do love you. I truly love you.
I'm gonna cry for the rest of the episode, but also laugh.
Okay.
Like you do.
Okay.
Oh, I just realized something that we should have asked, like, before starting to research this episode, which I researched, which is, I'm not sure if this kind of processed cheese is called American cheese, like, worldwide. What if the same thing in Canada is called Canadian cheese?
What I really hope is that maybe the rest of the world doesn't have to encounter this cheese.
I like it.
I mean, I like it, but it's not like a cheese.
We'll talk about that.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Memory lane?
Yeah.
So Tony Negroni, my mom, first name Tony, last name Negroni.
Got it.
Scorned this cheese. And
I can't say I'm surprised.
Yeah. And I'm not surprised either. She scorned this cheese. We never had Kraft Singles in the house, though I do have a very vivid memory of watching Kraft Singles ads.
Yes.
Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very memorable ad.
That said, I want to talk a little bit about the difference between, like, what you think of as American cheese and Velveeta.
Yeah, we'll get into that
okay,
for sure.
Because my dad always bought Velveeta to have around the house for mac and cheese.
Yeah, and that totally makes sense.
Okay.
We always had Kraft Singles in the house. I had, like, a false memory associated with these because I believed until yesterday that they started using the brand name Kraft Singles when I was a kid. Not the case.
Oh, when did they start using it?
They started using the name Kraft Singles in, like, 1963. Well, I can't find the answer. I thought I knew the answer, but I don't know. So, like, the 60s. Okay.
Okay.
So when I was a kid, we always had Kraft Singles in the house. They were called that. And I would snack on them, like, right out of the wrapper and, like, like, peel it, kind of fold it in half and eat the first half and then extract the second half. Like, I don't think I would enjoy snacking on that now.
The idea of that, like, thin, was it paper or was it, like, a thin layer of, like, deli plastic?
Plastic.
Oh, that sounds so satisfying, though, peeling that back.
Oh, it is.
Are both sides of a Kraft Single shiny?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So it's, like, super... Okay, you know what I'm thinking of?
Yes.
Fruit roll-ups.
Yeah, it's
just
like that.
Do you remember the plastic sheet that fruit roll-ups were on?
Absolutely.
And how the side that was in contact with the plastic was shiny.
And how fruit roll-ups were revolutionary because they were the first fruit roll that would actually peel off from the plastic and not stick to it and drive you crazy.
Wait, were there ones before that?
Oh, absolutely. Like,
really?
Like fruit leather.
Fruit leather stuck to the thing?
Oh, yeah. Like I would get these, like, round fruit leathers like that were they were like a big circle that was like stuck to a piece of cellophane and you could not peel them off. And I
you like constantly like making out with this piece of plastic.
I was constantly just licking this, trying to lick this layer of fruit spread, congealed fruit spread off of the cellophane, and it just looked filthy.
Wow, hot.
But it was great practice.
It's very dental dammy.
It is very dental dammy.
Okay. Anyway, back to Kraft singles. Okay, so you liked to snack on them.
Mm-hmm. They were also the filling in surprise cheese sandwiches, which is what my mom called grilled cheese sandwiches.
And so what is it?
Okay. So
it being processed
what
cheese.
What is American cheese and is it really cheese? So American cheese is a processed cheese product that's made with cheddar and or Colby cheese. We'll talk about what Colby cheese is in just a second.
Okay.
Emulsifiers, especially sodium citrate, salt, and other ingredients such as whey.
Okay.
And the emulsifiers are kind of the key thing. Oh, they're there to prevent the cheese from separating into solids and fat when you melt them. So the whole idea of these cheeses is to be like a meltable sea of goo.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Which is not to say that you can't use them as like a slice on a unheated sandwich, but it's not my preference.
Okay. Hold on. What is Colby cheese?
Okay, so Colby cheese is Jack cheese that has annatto coloring added, so it's orange.
And what's Jack cheese?
Jack cheese is a washed curd cheese. So it's like cheddar, but made with water instead of whey, and it doesn't undergo the cheddaring process, so it's designed to be a very mild, creamy, hard cheese. And Colby is made with the same process, but they add some natural coloring.
Does Jack taste a lot different from mozzarella?
Jack tastes pretty different from mozzarella. Does supermarket Jack taste a lot different from supermarket mozzarella? No, I don't think so. But mozzarella is tangier because it's made with whey.
Okay, got it. Interesting. I don't think I have ever thought of Jack cheese. Do you think maybe we could do an episode on Jack cheese?
We should do an episode on Jack cheese because I really like Jack cheese. It's now that I think about it, I'm going to talk about like the cheese to non-cheese continuum in a minute. And I feel like Jack is kind of like on one end of the cheese to non-cheese continuum, but maybe not all the way on the cheese side.
You know, I think that I first, when I used to work at a Whole Foods like 20 years ago selling cheese,
mm-hmm.
I think that we carried a product that was like Drunken Jack or something like
sure.
that. And it was like Jack. So it was I knew it was a washed rind and it was washed with something that made it like purple.
Yeah, like port or something.
Yeah, but I never tasted it. So
and there's Vella Dry Jack, which is like a really good cheese.
Yes, we carried that for sure.
And there's Colby Jack, which is just like marbled yellow mm-hmm. and white Jack cheese.
Usually appears as cheese cubes on a platter with like, you know, crudité.
Yeah. So American cheese cannot legally be called cheese. If you look at the fine print, it's always called something like pasteurized processed cheese food. But producers hate the term cheese food for obvious reasons because it sounds terrible. And so now they call it all sorts of non-regulated things, like Kraft singles are called pasteurized prepared cheese product, which is not a regulated term. It's just like something they made up.
Hold on. Let's just think about this for a second. Do we think this is actually better than pasteurized processed cheese food?
No.
Cheese food is pretty weird, and process has a really negative connotation to it.
So, yes, I think prepared has a more positive connotation than process.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know about product.
Hold on. And am I hearing in both of our pronunciations that there's no ED at the end of process?
No, the FDA calls it this process cheese with not processed cheese. I do not know why.
This drives me nuts. Like when people write on a menu whip cream
or
roast vegetables.
Well,
that
but what
I
about
don't
roast
like
beef?
Roast beef is a different thing. Roasted beef
what
doesn't
about
exist.
Roast wait, what did you say roasted beef doesn't
exist? Roasted beef. That
what
does
about,
not exist,
what about
but roasted vegetables.
What about roast potatoes?
So hold on. Roast beef is like a thing that goes beyond just the preparation of it. It's also like a flavor we think of.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess, but what's going but on like, here clearly is that roast already sounds like a past participle. And that's why it's getting used this way.
Okay, but what about whip? Whipped cream.
I think It's a good question. I think it's just like consonants getting smushed together.
Yeah, because it's hard like to whipped. Say whipped cream. Whipped cream.
It's hard. Cream. It's one of the hardest things in a typical day.
It is.
Yeah. All right. So I also learned that the FDA calls cheeses like Parmigiano Reggiano and Grana Padano granular cheese.
Yummy.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Do you like to put a little granular cheese on your pasta?
I do.
Me too. So you asked whether Velveeta is American cheese, and I want to answer this question by kind of introducing the idea of a cheese to non-cheese continuum. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
Sometimes we get into botany on the show. This is like food science.
Okay, ready.
Food engineering, kind of. So on the one side, you've got like Tillamook cheddar. That is cheese. It's made through like a fairly traditional cheese-making process, and it doesn't have any additives beyond rennet and salt. All right?
Okay.
On the other end is like things that are marketed as American slices or American singles and don't use the word cheese anywhere on the package or in the ingredients. Mm-hmm. Those are made from like milk, protein, and vegetable oil natural coloring and emulsifiers and stuff. Those are not very good.
And would that be Velveeta?
No.
Okay.
Let's talk about like Boar's Head. You know, you go up to the deli counter at the supermarket.
Hold on. Yeah. I need you to go back for a second because until this weekend, so we're recording this shortly after our Spilled Milk corporate retreat.
Yes.
And one of the items, so because we are still in these horrible times, we took all our groceries and cooked all our food.
Yes. I mean, that didn't seem like a burden.
No, it didn't seem like a burden. But ordinarily, we would like go out to dinner and stuff. Anyway, but one night we had burgers. Matthew requested American cheese. Mm-hmm. So I had volunteered to do all the grocery shopping. And when I got to the grocery store, it did not occur to me to go to the deli counter and get it sliced. I just went to where like the pre-sliced cheeses are.
Sometimes you just got to get it sliced, you know?
Yeah.
I think so. I do like the deli sliced American cheese. I also like Kraft singles. Wait, totally fine.
But hold on. They're different things?
They're different things. The deli sliced cheese is further along the cheese end of the cheese to non-cheese continuum.
So just because it comes in like a loaf, so higher quality processed cheeses come in loaves.
Yeah, so it has less added like whey and stuff and more cheese solids.
Huh. And can you ever buy it pre-sliced, like as singles?
You can buy it pre-sliced as singles. I've seen it. Like maybe in like a hanging case next to the deli case, like where they might have some like sliced salami and stuff.
Okay, fair enough.
It's still going to be better pre-sliced because the surface isn't going to get like sweaty. So
you mean it's going to be better fresh sliced?
Freshly sliced. Okay. So we go like real cheese, then deli sliced American cheese, then Kraft singles are kind of in the middle of the continuum.
Okay.
All right.
Got it.
Then Velveeta. So Velveeta is somewhat less real cheese than Kraft singles.
Okay.
It's more stabilizer,
more polymers.
And polymer oriented. And then you get like the stuff that has no cheese added at all.
Okay. And what would that be?
The bargain pre-sliced like that you'd buy like in the cheap cheese section of the supermarket. And they're labeled American slices or American singles. And don't use the word cheese on the package.
Oh, well, how's that different from Kraft singles?
So Kraft singles have the word cheese on the package. They are identified as pasteurized prepared cheese product.
Gosh, because when I was doing our retreat shopping, I almost bought like Kroger brand American cheese or American singles or...
Which might, like depending on whether it says cheese on the package and the specific ingredient list might be totally non-cheese or might be semi-cheese.
Okay. Wow.
I really went down a cheese hole.
Wow, you like, sure
remember,
did.
Remember we tasted Wookiee hole cheddar? I think I went down a Wookiee hole.
I think you did. Okay.
So the answer is Velveeta is kind of American cheese. It's like slightly less cheesy than what I think of as American cheese.
It's but slightly it's, more gooey.
Yeah, it's okay. More gooey. So let's talk about the history and then talk about like why these things exist when we can get real cheese.
Okay.
Because I think there is like a reason.
There's a time and a place.
I think there's a time and a place. I think I've always felt like, and I came up with this concept, that to everything there is a season.
Would you say that you turn toward that season and then you turn to the next and turn,
I tend to turn three times.
Okay. Okay, go on.
All right, so the story of American cheese is really the story of Kraft, because it was invented and first marketed by James L. Kraft.
Ah, to be James L. Kraft.
Yeah, like, I don't know, man. Do you think it would have been good to be one of these like, early 20th century industrial titans? Probably pretty good.
I'm sure it was better than bad.
Yeah, it was better. It was better than working for them, I'm sure.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So Kraft marketed American cheese. He invented it in like 1910 and marketed it by the late 19s. And the name American cheese and the product took off quickly, but it was not until 1950 that they started selling it sliced. And even then, they didn't call it Kraft Singles. They called it Kraft Deluxe Process Slices.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Can you buy the thing that is Kraft Singles as a block that you have to slice yourself?
Oh, that's a good question. The answer is no, because Kraft Singles were never a block. You can buy a block of Boar's Head or other deli brand American cheese.
So Kraft Singles were never like something.
They were
something,
never a block.
There was never a chip off the old block. There was just the chip.
Wow. I have to sit with that for a minute. What if I think I'm a chip off the old block, but there never was a block?
There's, you know, you broke the mold.
I think I broke the mold. So Kraft Singles are made by like rolling out a thin sheet of cheese-like substance and then cutting it into squares. So it's sort of extruded.
So like lasagna sheets.
Like, yes, exactly. Like, oh, that's an interesting idea. Like, what if you could get the sheets and make a lasagna with cheese in between sheets
God,
of cheese.
That is a lot of Kraft Singles.
There are a lot of like casserole recipes that use an enormous amount of American cheese that don't really appeal to me, but probably if I tried one would be pretty darn good.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Okay, so these are manufactured as like a long thin sheet or a sheet that is then cut into squares.
Right, and okay. Originally in 1950, they were sold in like a square package, but there was nothing separating the slices.
Oh, that sounds like a mess.
Right. So it was a problem. Like they would stick together. And I'm getting a lot of this from a great article by Charles Wilson from the New York Times in 2012, which we'll link to. And he writes, quote, "The manufacturing difficulties were solved in part by an elaborate contraption that ran liquid pasteurized cheese through a, quote, chill roll, a machine that resembled a large rolling pin. The roll created a long ribbon of cheese, which was then cut into 3-inch square slices."
Hold on, I'm going to read this again.
Yeah, slow your chill roll. I'm sure there's a video of this.
Okay. All right, go on.
So it was called Kraft Deluxe Process Slices. The individual wrapping was added in 1956.
So there were like 6 years there when the cheese slices just stuck together.
Yeah, and it sounds like the individual wrapping was like invented by another company and sold to Kraft, which I feel like must have been kind of embarrassing.
Wait, hold on. So wait, say this again, it up.
In 1950, they introduced non-individually wrapped sliced Kraft Singles that were just a stack of cheese slices in a package with nothing in between the slices.
So a stack of disaster.
A stack of disaster. That's what it was called. It was really the Kraft Disaster Stack.
Okay.
And then in 1956, they started individually wrapping the cheese slices, and that's when things really took off.
Okay, cool. Okay, and I seem to remember when we were kids, in some of those Kraft ads, they made some pretty hard to believe claims about the amount of milk in each slice.
I remember this so vividly. Yes, that they said it was 5 ounces of milk in each slice, and they had these commercials where like someone was like pouring a glass of milk, and it turned into a Kraft Single. And in 1992, the FDA was like, "You cannot say that because it isn't true." And in particular, like the particular objection by the FDA was that if they put 5 ounces of milk in something, then each slice should have the equivalent nutrients associated with 5 ounces of milk, and they do not. There's been an elephant in the room this like, whole time, I feel like, right?
Why do we have this stuff?
Right. So, like, we could get Tillamook cheddar, and it's not that expensive, and it's very tasty, and it's real cheese. why would we ever buy this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And friend of the show, Kenji Lopez-Alt, wrote a really good article about that question. And we'll link to it. It was in Serious Eats. But the reason is texture. Mm-hmm. American cheese has a texture that no real cheese can match.
Yeah, this seems to be, I mean, what are other products that exist solely for texture? I mean, this really is texture. I mean, like, I know that this has flavor too, but it...
Mayo has flavor, right?
Yeah, mayo has flavor. When was the last time you ate it? You don't remember if it has flavor?
I don't like mayo.
But I bet I'm going to try to sneak some mayo onto a sandwich and see if you notice.
Okay, yeah. Like, you're always passing me sandwiches, and I just kind of reach my hand over and just, like, stuff it into my mouth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you could probably punk me with a sandwich.
No, I would love listeners to write in with suggestions for foods that exist solely for texture.
Yeah, I mean, I can think, like yuba. Like, I can think of foods that exist... Yeah, but that these are foods that exist like to give you like kind of a positive texture experience, and American cheese exists to give you sort of a background texture experience. Are those different things? I don't know.
I'm not sure I know what you mean. I mean, I guess boba, like the texture of boba in bubble tea is...
I don't mean positive in the sense of good. I mean positive in the sense of like you want to focus on that texture.
That's correct. I get that. Okay. Yeah.
Whereas, but I don't know. Yeah, like the creaminess of American cheese, like you can focus on the creaminess.
Sure. Right? I focus on the creaminess all the time.
Yeah. So American cheese, you can melt it. You could boil it if you want, and it won't split or become grainy. And that makes it good for certain types of foods.
How do you feel about the fact that American cheese has so little flavor? Is this part of its appeal?
I think that's part of its appeal. Yeah, like that if you make a mac and cheese using like the amount of Tillamook sharp cheddar in the amount that you would use like a Velveeta, it's going to have too much flavor. Aside from the fact that the texture won't be as good, like it's going to be too intense. I have made a mac and cheese that had too much cheddar.
And by too intense, do you mean it gets too rich? Like the flavor itself? You know how some flavors are almost like richness being conferred not just through fat or texture, but also through flavor.
Yeah, that it's like, I mean, I think you could get away with it by using like, you know, medium or mild cheddar. But like, yeah, the kind of thing where you like take a bite, like, whoa, this is great. And then you take like two more bites and you're like, and I'm done. Like it's just overloads.
I would call that richness.
But richness implies that it's because of like the amount of fat, but okay. You will get plenty of fat from using American cheese. Like I think it's like taste bud overload.
That's a good point. I haven't thought about the amount of fat in American cheese versus cheddar or that. I mean, are they similar?
I think so.
We're not sure. All right, listeners. So we've got a whole lot of unsureness.
Yeah, but I like how American cheese like adds something without really calling attention to itself. Like I would never balk at having a slice of American cheese on a burger. I think it can improve any burger, but it's not like ooh, like taste this delicious American cheese. It's mostly there to like add like that creamy layer.
Well, yes. And I think about, so if I go to Dick's here in Seattle, which is a very inexpensive fast food place, what I look for in a burger there is sort of a homogenous texture.
Yeah.
Like bun to burger to cheese, there's not that much variation for the teeth.
And the cheese slice sort of glues the burger to the bun in a nice way.
It does. And there is something really nice about the way that as you bite into it, you truly can feel the give of the cheese in a very different way from cheddar.
Yeah. Have you tried the new Dick's special Cabrales burger?
Wait, that's a fancy blue cheese.
It's fancy.
Spanish blue cheese. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. Thanks. That was a good joke.
Yeah. That was a good joke. Yep. Okay. So Matthew, obviously you buy this stuff.
And
you always buy the actual like fresh sliced, like deli sliced one.
Yep.
And I noticed that you tend to buy the white one.
Yeah. Which can be a problem. Like why? I just kind of like the way it looks better in context. Especially,
does it just look more like cheddar? And in truth, you're responding to the appearance.
Yeah, they certainly taste exactly the same, the white one and the orange one. But also, like, I have no good reason for buying the white American cheese. And also, when you walk up to the counter and say, give me the white American cheese, and you're a white American guy, like, it feels problematic.
That's dumb.
So, but yeah, I like the deli sliced. I think that
this is so interesting to me. I just never thought about it.
like it has slightly more cheddar flavor, just very slightly. And I feel like, and when we just tasted them side by side, the real textural difference was that the Kraft singles leave kind of a film on the roof of your mouth.
Like, and it's very obvious. You don't have to go looking for it.
Oh, it's also possible we forgot to take the wrapper off.
So what do you use American cheese for besides grilled cheese and burgers?
So I think it is great in mac and cheese. I don't really make homemade mac and cheese. We did a whole episode about that. Mm-hmm. Remember that? The Krusty Corners episode? Mm-hmm. Breakfast sandwiches. Mm. I love a slice of American cheese on a breakfast sandwich. I don't think there's any other cheese that compares.
And like, by breakfast sandwich, are you thinking like English muffin with scrambled egg?
English muffin with scrambled or fried egg, like an over easy egg, sausage patty or bacon optionally, and a slice of American cheese. So
I have
good.
A question about the American cheese.
Yeah.
Is American cheese like melty enough, or like, you know, it seems like it melts maybe at a lower point, a lower heat than real
cheddar?
You could
probably like put some down your pants and it would melt.
Do you have to do anything to make the American cheese melt on your breakfast sandwich? Or if you just plop it right on top of your hot egg, does it melt?
It doesn't melt quite enough for my preferences.
So
I will like put it on in the pan and cover the pan for 10 seconds.
You put it on the egg?
I will usually put it, it depends. Like if I'm doing a sausage patty, I'll put it on the sausage patty like I was making a cheeseburger.
Uh-huh.
If I'm doing like scrambled egg, like I think that will be hot enough to melt it. If the English muffin is hot too, and just like let it sit for 30 seconds before I start eating.
Mm, yeah. Okay. I wish
really
we
good.
Knew the melt point of it. There's so many things that I wish you had researched.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I had
96 degrees.
Oh.
That's
the melt point. Mm-hmm. Okay. I just figured it out. Great. Okay.
All right. Anything? Oh, other things. Philly cheesesteaks. That is the other main thing I use it for at home. It's my favorite cheese for a Philly cheesesteak. I love making Philly cheesesteaks, and I love how when you use American cheese, it just like kind of melts throughout. And I know you can get that from Cheese Whiz also, but I just prefer the texture of American cheese.
I've never had a Philly cheesesteak.
Oh, I should make you one. They're very good.
Oh, I would love that. Maybe we should get somebody on the show who could talk to us about Philly cheesesteaks too.
Maybe someone from Philadelphia?
Maybe.
All right.
And then you can make me one and we'll talk about it.
Okay. I like this idea.
Okay. Matthew, are there other types of American cheese, or is it just, is American cheese American cheese, or is it like cheddar where you've got like a whole family of things with slight variations?
Yeah, there are other processed cheeses like, you know, American cheese is usually based on cheddar and or Colby. Velveeta is like a little different and like not based on any specific cheese, I don't think. And then there's Provel cheese, which is a processed cheese made from provolone and mozzarella. And it is associated with St. Louis cuisine.
Mm.
And in particular, it is used to top St. Louis style pizza, but it's also used for like sandwiches and stuff in St. Louis.
Wow.
I've never been to St. Louis. I don't know anything about St. Louis cuisine. I've never had St. Louis style pizza, but I am fascinated.
I love these weird regional things.
Yeah.
I mean, not to say that Provel is any weirder than anything else, but
no.
I love like these like city-based regionalisms.
Yeah, no, like how the rest of my family at one point went on vacation in Springfield, Illinois, when my sister-in-law Silots W was living there,
uh-huh.
And they had this thing that is a Springfield, Illinois specialty called a shoe that's like a bunch of French fries with cheese sauce and a bunch of other toppings on them. So
that
sort of like
great.
Nachos, but made with French fries and like any. Like sometimes like sliced deli meats and like all kinds of things.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
they came back and said they did not think I would like it. And I think they're probably right.
Okay.
But
Matthew,
I'm glad it exists.
Do we have anything else to say about American cheese?
I don't think we
do. Or processed cheese.
No, I don't think we do.
There was a lot of learning for me in this episode.
Me too.
Like, wow.
I started researching it. This like we got home from our retreat yesterday and like at 7:30 p.m. I jumped in. I'm like, okay, American cheese, how much can there be to this? Like, I think I left out a lot because I fell asleep after a while.
Mm-hmm. Can I do spilled mail?
Yes, please do.
Okay, so listener Brighter says, hello, my name is Brighter and I am 14 years old. My mom has asked a question before, presumably a question on the show.
No, just a question in general.
And I thought I would email you with a different question.
My mom has asked a question, Brighter, why are you doing that?
I just got braces. It sucks. Oh, so sorry, Brighter.
Yeah.
Do you have any ideas for some soft food other than applesauce and chicken noodle soup? I'm a pretty adventurous eater. Thanks. Love the podcast.
All right. Here are a couple things that came to mind for me. Cheese omelet. I love making myself a cheese omelet. The way I make them, they are super soft because I like get them in and out of the pan really quick so they don't brown. And they're just kind of like runny and delicious.
Mm-hmm. What about juk?
Absolutely. Yeah, we did a whole episode on congee or juk. Listen to that episode.
Mm-hmm. With Hetty McKinnon as our guest on the show.
Very
listen
easy to
that.
Make, and you can season it however you like.
Mm-hmm. It could make it spicy.
Yeah. Hiyayako, like cubes of silken tofu that you top with soy sauce and like grated ginger. I don't know, like I know you're not supposed to like get little bits of stuff in your braces, but like you can top it like with whatever seems good. And if you get some decent quality silken tofu, that's delicious. Mm-hmm. Other soft tofu dishes like yudofu, which is like stewed tofu, like tofu in hot broth, is very tasty. Bear paw tofu is more work, but totally worth it because it's like fried tofu, but it's not like crispy, so it's still like soft and yielding, but it has like a little more chew to it, and you make a spicy sauce to go with it.
Mm-hmm. What about mashed potatoes?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of, there was this, I don't know how you feel about eggplant.
I love eggplant.
But I know that we've mentioned on the show a long time ago this old Francis Lamb recipe from the Gourmet magazine website. So if you go to search gourmet.com Francis Lamb eggplant. And basically, you cook eggplant for a really long time to turn it into like a mush, which then becomes a pasta sauce. And it is so good.
I have an eggplant recipe that we had for dinner recently that I would also recommend that I think would be perfect. It is called fish fragrant eggplant slices.
Oh, I love that.
It's a bit of work to make because you have to slice up the eggplant, salt it, and then fry it, and then stir fry it. But it sure is worth it.
It's so good. I have only eaten it when you have cooked it for me.
So good.
And it's incredible. What about like braises?
Yeah, like braised pork shoulder comes to mind.
Yes.
Because it braises so soft.
Well, and you can season it to sort of like any cuisine that you want.
Yeah.
I mean, you could.
And then you don't have to do anything. You just like put it in the oven for 4 hours on low heat.
Yes. Nice.
Okay.
Wow.
Ryder, please get back in touch and let us know if any of those suggestions were helpful or if you made any of them.
Great. All right.
Or convince your mom to make them, which is even better.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know what we haven't done lately is what's going on in the underworld?
Oh,
let's
do
that
first.
What
is going on in the underworld?
So I haven't been playing Hades very much, but Teenager of the Show December has been playing every day. I finally got my kid hooked on video games.
Yeah. Oh, that was a long slog.
And they made it out of the underworld. And I was like, does that mean you won the game? And they were like, no. Once you get out of the underworld, it gets even harder because Zagreus, the hero, can't survive. Like the above world environment, like doesn't agree with his constitution. And so like he can't survive very well up there. And so it's even you have to like get like life total bonuses and like battle your way through. I don't know. I kind of lost the plot at this point.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
There's a lot going on in the
above world.
Yeah. So maybe that doesn't really fit the segment. New segment. What's going on above the underworld?
Okay.
All right. And now it's time for Now But Wow.
Matthew, what are you into this week?
Okay, I feel like I already talked about this, but I think you'll know if I did or not. Have I talked about 20th Century Boys on the show?
This doesn't sound familiar.
Okay, I've been reading this comic series. It's a Japanese manga comic series called 20th Century Boys by Naoki Urasawa. It's kind of a classic. Like people who know manga will know this series very well, I think. And it's available in a beautiful English language edition in 12 volumes. I don't remember where I heard about it or why I picked up the first one, but like I wasn't like totally won over by the first volume, but then I'm like, the library has it. I'll try one more. And then I totally got hooked. This is a absolutely like wild, rollicking adventure story that takes place in three different timelines because it is about a group of kids in the 70s who like as kids do, come up with this like ongoing like you know story that they play, that they act out about, like a battle of good versus evil that happens on like the eve of the 21st century, and there's like a giant robot and a death cult and a scary symbol with an eyeball, and like, you know, this is a fun thing they do at kids as kids, and then fast forward to the eve of the 21st century, and suddenly it's all actually happening, and they have to figure out why. Who, like, within their orbit, like, you know, knew about this and you know, made it all real. And the bad guys win. But, like, 15 years later in 2015, like, the people who survived are trying to bring down the death cult. And so it keeps, like, moving around between these different time periods. You meet tons of cool characters. It's super exciting. There's tons of, like, adventure story and manga cliches deployed really well. I love the giant robot.
I love the enthusiasm on your face. Listener, I'm sorry you can't see it. The enthusiasm on your face and in your voice when you talk about this.
Yeah, I feel like there are some things about it that may have not aged as well. And it's very, like you know, boy-focused story.
Sure.
But it is incredibly fun, and I've forgotten how annoying it is to have to, like, track down all the volumes of a series with many volumes, because I've been getting some from the library, but then some of them they don't have, and I've been, like, ordering used copies and waiting for those. And anyway, it's great. 20th Century Boys by Naoki Urasawa.
Fun! Okay. Well, our producer, as always, is Abby Circatella. And you can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
And go to reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk to, I was going to say, hook up with other people who like the show.
Yeah, it's like a Grindr for podcast listeners.
Mm-hmm. It's like a burr grinder. That's a food thing, right?
Like, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like a mill.
It's like, it'll just grind you up and spit you out.
All right.
All right.
Until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that, like, if you put us in your ears, we'll melt.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
Why you gotta be such a downer, bro?
No, you're right. We can rekindle the magic. I've been meaning to tell you, I went to wizard school.